This show is brought to you with support from Actable, the company that helps more than 150,000 hoteliers run more efficient and profitable hotel businesses every day at every level. See why more than 90% of the top 50 management companies in the U.S. use Actable at Actable.com. That's Actable.com. Our guest today is on a mission to build America's most generous real estate company, and he's using hospitality to do it. Michael Locker is the president of Anchor Investments, and in this episode, we get into the opportunity he saw, how he got started, the challenges he had to work through, and the impact he's seeing. I was so inspired hearing Micah's story because there are aspects of what he shares here that anyone can use today. Let's get into it.
Hospitality.
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 Hospitality brings people together.
This is Hospitality Daily, the show that helps you stay informed and inspired each day by the most interesting people in hospitality. My name is Josiah McKenzie, and my goal is to help you reconnect with why you work in this industry and get fired up to go out there, delight others, and reach your goals. Let's get started. I'm going to ask you as an opening question what I ask all of my guests, and that is, if you had an early memory or experience receiving hospitality, either personally or in a professional kind of hotel or motel context, that stood out to you at a young age, and if so, what was that?
I would just have to say the way my mom ran our house. I mean, we frankly didn't have money to we didn't really ever eat out or ever stay in a hotel, but my mom was always making my home feel very hospitable and just welcoming people in that had needs or whatever. But just really I would say I get my sense of hospitality from the way she kind of ran our household. And it was just warm meals, gracious, great atmosphere in my house. And that would be my earliest example of kind of hospitality.
Amazing. We're probably going to dig into a lot of different elements of this, but I do want our listeners to understand a little bit of context. And I wonder if you could describe your organization today, where you're focused, what you do, and then we're going to get into the details of how you do what you do. But high level, would you mind telling our listeners a little bit about Anchor?
Yeah, so I founded Anchor in 2009 at the kind of bottom of, or the beginning of the Great Recession. And obviously, in hindsight, that was a great time to start a real estate business just due to the market was at a bottom. And there was a lot of available real estate and very limited capital. And I was fortunate to have some relationships where I was able to raise a pretty significant amount of money. And we did not get into the hotel business until about 8 years ago. So that would have been, 2016, 2017. But so initially, we were just buying commercial assets. Mainly retail, but we also bought some office industrial. And then along the way I ultimately ended up in the hotel business I used to own a bunch of rental houses in Nashville. And when Airbnb started, I heard about it, researched it, and I was like, well, let's just furnish a house and see what happens. And early days, Nashville's obviously been an unbelievable tourism market. So early days, I always laugh. I think when we put our properties on there are 300 Airbnbs in the whole city. And I don't know if there's 15,000 a day, but there's a lot. It's a huge number. But me and a friend did that. But the inefficiencies of managing Airbnbs all over the city was big. And I was like, man, if we could ever just do this in one building and run it with because the big gripe about Airbnb is the level of service. It's one Airbnb experience is phenomenal. And the next one, there might be a dead body in the closet. And so I was like, man, if we could ever do this in one property. So we bought on behalf of one of our retail clients, we bought a really cool building in downtown Nashville, and the upper floors had been vacant forever. And I was like, man, this would be a great opportunity to convert these into hotel rooms, run them with hotel level quality, but run them, through the alternative booking mechanisms like Airbnb, Expedia. We'll start our own website, but that was my foray of how we got in. But my main business at Anchor is we redevelop shopping centers all over the country and find higher and better uses for the dying shopping center in whatever town you're from.
I find that fascinating. I mean, this is a hospitality show, but I want people to understand the importance of real estate in enabling that. We're going to get into a lot of different elements of the hospitality offerings you have. But I want our listeners to understand just a little bit about the world of real estate, because the hotel business, the hospitality business, is in many respects fundamentally a real estate business. How did you get involved in the real estate world?
I graduated college 22 years ago, and I was heading to Wall Street, and through divine intervention, I had a mentor in college. I had been so laser focused on going to New York and working in finance, and a mentor in college encouraged me to I'd only done internships based around that and gone and worked in New York and was planning on going back. And my college mentor was like, man, I would encourage you as a young guy, you've been so focused, you've never even considered something else. My last semester, I had to come back. I had started pre-med. I had to come back to college for a final semester to finish the right credit hours because I'd lost some credits when I changed majors. And so my mentor was like, you ought to think about something else. You've already got a job in New York. And I was like, man, the only other thing I could ever envision myself doing is maybe real estate, because I love kind of the passive income component. And that's the only other kind of thing I've ever considered. He's like, oh, go work for a friend of mine. And after a couple months, I was like, this is such a better fit personality wise than sitting in cubicle 16 hours a day in New York. And I like the deal making and kind of placemaking components of it. So I moved to Nashville 22 years ago and started as a broker. And then one of my clients hired me, who was a developer investor, and he hired me to kind of be his junior guy. And that's how I got on the principal investing side of the business.
I think what you mentioned around placemaking is going to be familiar for many of our listeners in the world of hospitality. But I wonder if you could describe a little bit more about what people who don't work in the real estate world might be overlooking or might not fully recognize about what you found compelling about working in real estate. Maybe it's about placemaking, maybe it's about something else, but what did you enjoy about working in the general real estate industry?
I love the concept of an idea to a spreadsheet to see if it's financially viable, to, buying the property and saying, I've got these ideas. We're going to do this entertainment venue and bowling alley. And, people are eventually going to come here and bring their families and go to a concert. And so I liked that, it all kind of starts on paper and with an idea, but then I can drive over there and see it. And then I really love that we can take an old Kmart or something that's been dead for 10 years, no jobs, no tax revenue for this city, no people enjoying this big vacant piece of real estate. And then we can create viable businesses, so we can give entrepreneurs chances to start their business and house their businesses, but also provide jobs for the community, tax revenue for the city. And it's just physical. It's not just on Wall Street, you're just kind of playing with math all the time and trading paper basically. And I in real estate, no, we had this grand idea and now people are actually enjoying it. And it's fun to go to our shopping centers or hotels on the weekend, bring my kids. And it's people are there and you can just tell they're having a blast. And you're we played a part in this.
I love that. Now there's a lot of people that work in the general real estate industry. You are on a mission to build what you are calling America's most generous real estate company. What's the story behind that?
Well, I grew up very just under means, my family, and I watched my mom just really struggle my whole life. My parents were married, but my dad never really could keep employment. And so my mom was a person who, super hardworking, very gifted, but she'd never gone to college. There was a certain gap on where she could get paid just because of education. And she was also trying to be a mom. So she would work night shift jobs just so she could also be at home when we got home from school, And so I watched my mom just really struggle. And my family growing up, we could pay a very small mortgage and put food on the table, but everything else was an emergency. Anything, a car breakdown, emergency, there's just no extra money. And God would just bring people along to help my family. And my mom would be praying, gosh, we got to get the car fixed. Cause that becomes a self-fulfilling, car breaks down, now you can't get your job, now you lose your job. We used to joke that my mom had a magic mailbox at my house because cash would just show up in our mailbox. And so people would help my family. And I remember what an impact that had on me as a kid. And I was always man, if I could ever just make any money, I really want to help people, because my mom was such an amazing person. but she really just struggled. It wasn't for like, she's not lazy. I mean, you've never met a harder working person, but she had five children, you know, it's like, so I just saw, and so I've got a big heart for people that are trying in the world. They're not just sitting on their couch every day. They're actually trying to, but you know, for one reason or another, they might have not gone to college or whatever. They can only get certain paying jobs. And as you know, everything's expensive and it's like, they can just barely scrape by, but it's not because they're a bad person or they're lazy. It's just like life circumstances happened and they can only, you know, achieve so much. So that's how I got into like being generous. And then I came up with the idea of like, what if we just used our business as a vehicle for generosity? Like, I was always very personally generous, but I used to kind of look at my company as like, it's a money creation machine and then I own it. And so it's like, you know, it spits out some profits to me as the owner. And then my wife and I can choose to go help a lot of people. And then about 7 or 8 years ago, I went through a program called Halftime. There's a book by a guy named Bob Buford called Halftime that's been very impactful. And they have a leadership development program. And I was kind of like, I got to a point in my career where I've done this for a long time. By God's grace, I had, you know, been successful. I wasn't working as much for a paycheck anymore. I was really like trying to figure out, what's my purpose? Why was I put on this earth? And I read that book and it really like, and then going through the program, they really helped me realize that like, God has given me this business to steward. And if I can treat it as like, this is my platform to go help people. And like, if I could like kind of change my view of why I have this business, then that would give me a lot of purpose. Cause I really enjoy work and love business, but I really wasn't working for a paycheck anymore. So then you have to ask yourself, why am I actually working? Like, should I sell my business? Should I coach inner city football? Should I run a nonprofit? Like, what's my greatest impact on this world? So I was processing all those things. And then I was like, well, what if we just like started saying like, hey, we just want to be radically generous through the business. We're going to be generous to our employees. We're going to be generous to all of our partners, to the communities we serve. And so that's how we kind of came up with the concept of like, we want to be America's most generous real estate company.
It sounds like that shift created a lot of meaning for you, but also had an opportunity to provide a bigger impact in the community. Because I was going to ask you, you know, why not just maximize the ability for the business to spin off cash to yourself and you could be generous personally? But you just kind of partially answered my question in terms of, it seems like now with associates and team members in the business, you could be more generous. Could you speak a little bit more to, I guess, the reasons to be generous through the business itself and not just through you personally?
Well, I think it gives my team a lot of purpose. Like, we attract super talented people. And one thing I've noticed, especially with people in their 20s, like they are very mission oriented and they don't want to just go work for a global corporation that's, you know, job is to make as much money for shareholders as possible. Like, they do care and they ask a lot more questions than, I'm in my mid 40s. Like, they ask a lot more questions than me and my friends were asking about what's the company exist to do. We were just thankful to have jobs, you know? And so I think they're like, what do y'all do? And so it's been super encouraging because I encourage my team a lot. I mean, I own the business, but there's still aspects of my day-to-day job I don't love. I don't feel like that's how I'm wired, but like, for the business to keep growing, I have to deal with lenders and fill out reports and send a bunch of financials and get a bunch of questions. And so, you know, do I love that? No. But like, I tell my team all the time, I'm like, just remember when you're filling that spreadsheet out, that just feels like a total grind for this monthly report. Like, there's going to be people in downtown Nashville tonight getting showers and warm meals. And there's going to be teen moms that'll get Christmas this year. I remind myself on those days when it feels like a lot of work, that's like, because I'm putting this work in, there's going to be a lot of people that are going to get, you know, encouragement just like me and my family did growing up because I'm putting the work in. And it's just given a lot of purpose to me and my team.
That's got to be a powerful motivator. I want to get more into the hospitality part of your business because you run a diversified real estate business across many different asset classes, but specifically in hospitality, could you share a little bit with our listeners about what you're doing with your hotels?
Yeah. So about 8 years ago, I talked a little bit earlier about how we used to have a bunch of Airbnbs and we found this building. So when we opened officially our first hotel in downtown Nashville, we came up with an idea called Rooms for Rooms. And I always laugh, like, no real estate developer ever has an original idea. I kind of stole it from Tom's, you know, a pair for a pair. And then I have a friend in Nashville that's a big realtor, and he runs a charity called Homes for Homes, where they, all the homes he sells in Nashville, they build homes in Africa. And so I was like, that'd be cool to connect for guests. Like, hey, if you rent a marketplace hotel room, we're going to provide 16 rooms down at the homeless shelter for an average weekend stay. And so we started with that. And when I went through the halftime program, the guy that mentored me through that was like, I would tell him about my shopping center business. And I'm like, and I also have these hotels. And we're like, it's really cool because every time somebody books with us, like we're providing this and it's been so fun. And he's like, man, every time you talk about that, you just kind of light up. And he's like, you seem so passionate about it. And I was like, yeah, I love saving these historic buildings because in Nashville, somebody probably tear them down. And it's like, so it's fun. I was like, it's been fun to like create like a marketplace business, but like I can see a direct correlation between every booking equals rooms in the mission and meals and all these things. So he was like, why wouldn't you just try to do more of that? Like, why wouldn't you try to grow the business? And I was like, why wouldn't I? You know, so, and we started out giving like 25% of our profits away. That's kind of how the math worked out. And then as our other businesses grown, I was like, well, what if we give half away? And then it was like, now we're like, what if we just give all the profits away? And like, we can tell people like, literally, we get no benefit from running this business. And from a P&L standpoint, we just act like it never started. So we currently have 3 hotels in Nashville, and to my knowledge, we're the only people in the country that give away 100% of the profits, and probably will be the only people that ever do. I hope some of your listeners will be encouraged. I always encourage people though. They're like, man, that's crazy. I can't give away 100% of my profits. I'm like, I know. I have another business where I can feed my family, but I was like, you can give away 1% or 5% or 10%. Like you could probably, and you probably would never miss it, you know, and you'd have this, like, it's a great recruiting tool for talent. And just like, it's just given me a lot of purpose. You know, running businesses is not easy and you do have challenges. So it's like on the days we have challenges, I'm like, man, because we're doing this though, like there's a lot of good happening in our city.
We'll be back after a quick break.
Are you enjoying this conversation? If so, I invite you to pause this episode and text it to a friend or colleague right now. Not only will you let them know that you're thinking of them, but you'll help and inspire them as well. Thank you, and let's get back to the conversation. So what I'm really curious about is to hear your thoughts on why choose hospitality in these hotels as the vehicle for generosity, because you could create any type of business and build a model where that is, you're being generous from that, right? And then specifically within real estate, you can create a lot of beautiful life-giving things. You mentioned shopping centers and revitalizing those and all the run-on benefits. But what drew you specifically to hotels and hospitality? Is there something inherent about providing hospitality that you saw a special opportunity to make the world a better place and to serve these people?
Yeah, I mean, I do love in hospitality. Like we can, like, you know, people are coming to Nashville our hotels this weekend will have people celebrating anniversaries and girls trips and friend trips and, you know, or visiting family. And so I do like that, like the correlation between like we serve people at our hotels, and then because we serve them well, we have this revenue to go serve people who could never stay in our hotels and never will stay in our hotels. But like the charities we partner with can serve them with the same level of love, care, and excellence that we do for people paying $300-$400 a night, you know? So I like the correlation. It's like, also like to think about, it's like crazy, but like none of these people we serve will ever get a chance to stay in my hotels, sadly. Like it's like, but because we have people that can afford to stay in our hotels, we can go serve all these people and meet their needs and let them feel cared for and have a bed to sleep in and not be sleeping outside and just all the things, meet all their needs.
I wonder if you could tell me a little bit about how you run the hotel side of this for paying guests and how you thought about everything from design to the amenities, like just the general offering. What did you decide to include in that and why?
Well, our last 2 hotels have been a lot of fun because we bought vacated churches that were historic. You know, they are the fabric of the neighborhood. I mean, one's like 110 years old, the other's like 140 or 50 years old. And like they've been in the neighborhood long before any of the current residents were. So like, and churches historically have existed to serve the communities they exist in. So even if it's a non-religious person, it's like one of our churches, like during one of the plagues, was like basically a hospital for people in the neighborhood, you know, like, so we, when we went through the zoning process, people were like, do you feel bad, like taking a church and turning it into a for-profit? I'm like, well, these hotels exist to serve people, you know, we'll serve our guests. And then with the revenues, we'll serve a lot of people in our city that need help. And so I've loved, like, it's been fun for me on my creative side to like save these buildings. Cause like, people do not build buildings anymore like they did 100 and something years ago. I mean, the craftsmanship, it would cost you $50 million. I mean, it's just crazy. We can never recreate these. And sadly, though, because people didn't have the financial resources to take care of them over time as the church's population declined, like they had a lot of deferred maintenance. So some other developer might have torn them down or built apartments or condos. And it's been fun for us to be like, we're going to preserve the building. And you can never recreate the beauty of our hotels in modern construction.
Especially my dad's a pastor, and I remember driving by some churches that were converted into something else, and he was always like, that's kind of a shame. But I like your frame of it, right? Where it's like the church is more of this kind of pillar of a community to serve the people in the community. And you're coming up with a different spin on this, right? And you're doing this in a really creative way. I love the approach. I guess, what were some of the challenges in bringing this to life? You know, it's one thing to have the vision. It's a very different thing to bring something like this to life. You know, what were some of the big challenges you had to work through to get where you are today?
I mean, the first church, the challenge was getting it zoned, because I didn't realize this and most people don't, but like these churches were built on like residential lots. So the base zoning is like religious use or residential. So we had to go like rezone these things. And of course, like the neighbors had opinions and fears because they're built into neighborhoods. They're not like in commercial districts. So it's what makes our whole hotel super fun to stay in, because you're like in the neighborhood and you walk to the coffee shop, just like the residents do. But, you know, people worry about like, oh, what kind of people are going to be staying here? And are they going to be partying and, you know, all that? And we're like, we've been super militant on like making sure the guest experience. Cause I was like, when I have four young children, and I'm like, when my wife and I get a weekend away, I do not want to be woken up. Like, so, you know, we have very like strict quiet time rules, and, you know, we're not that type of hotel, like a party hotel. But, you know, of course, that's what people envision when you say, oh, we're building a hotel in your neighborhood. After the first one, thankfully, because we were such a good neighbor, like the second one was easy. But zoning was the hurdle in the first. But then, of course, renovating a historic building, you better have a big contingency because you have no idea what's behind those walls. And so, I mean, it's almost as cheap to like tear the building down and rebuild a new hotel as it was to like renovate. People think you save all this money because you save the walls, but I'm like, everything else on the inside, you're basically building brand new, and it's expensive because you got to do a lot of structural things and fix a lot of things that just been people haven't taken care of for 50 years.
Interesting. I'm curious, you know, now that you're open, you know, with these properties, what's been the reception? What sort of guest feedback are you getting?
People love it. I mean, it's been fun. The same people like stood up and yelled at me in zoning meetings, now I see in the neighborhood and they're like, oh, my cousin just stayed there. They loved it. You know, or we'll see neighbors like early when we open, they would always be like peeking through the windows and we're like, you can come in and check it out. And they're like, oh my gosh, this is so cool. We're so proud of this. Like, and these were the same people that thought you were the devil when you tried to get it zoned. So the neighbors, of course we've had some little things that have happened, but we are very responsive in our management team to like be a great neighbor. That was our promise from the beginning, is like, we want to be a part of the neighborhood. We're not turning our back on the neighborhood. If you ever have any problems with any of our guests, please let us know.
I love that notion of involving neighbors. Come take a look, you know, check it
out.
I wonder if we could switch tracks slightly and talk a little bit about breaking cycles of poverty, specifically through this model that you've built. You alluded to this earlier in our conversation. You do a lot of work to help people experiencing homelessness. I'm based in San Francisco, which has a big homeless challenge. And I'm always curious about, okay, what practically can be done? And in my research for this conversation, you've invested a lot in this area specifically. What have you learned about helping people that are experiencing poverty or homelessness and breaking the cycle?
I mean, I can break it into two pieces. I've learned a lot about the homeless crisis. Like, sadly, a lot of those folks like you think like a lot of the people we partner with are saying like initially our goal was like you want all these wins, like, oh, we found them on the streets, then we got them sober, then we got them a job, and now they're living. But like as I've gotten to know more people, and my company volunteers with some of our partners, a lot of these people have major mental health challenges, and like they're not going to eventually get a job, a house, like, you know. So it's like my friends that run these ministries is like they're like, we used to have all these goals, and of course we have some amazing success stories, but those are the people that were already mentally healthier. Some of them, we're just going to love on them for the next 15 years while they live on the streets, and they don't even want off the streets. We tried to help them, and they literally just like, that's their life now. And, you know, but like the other, so we partner with 7 charities, 4 of which serve the homeless population, 3 do other things. One's a teen mom ministry. One is called Corner to Corner, which helps people of color with entrepreneurship and starting their own business. So that's like a great, like you talk about breaking the cycles of poverty, like that's what they do, is like the person who's working at Burger King flipping burgers, but also makes amazing chicken wings, and their friends tell them, oh my gosh, you ought to start a, you know, they help that person who's got a dream, but they have a day job, say, hey, how do you go from like your friends telling you make amazing chicken wings to start selling them at a fair, to start, you know, on the weekends when you're off work, to doing, you know, to eventually like having a food truck. And so they have a lot of cool success stories about helping people that were at the poverty line or a little above it or a little below it, but like achieve the American dream, own a business, buy a house, you know. And so we love like partnering with people like that, that are trying to really give people a hand up, just not a hand out.
I love it. I think as we wrap here, like heading into this conversation, you and I were talking about, we want to inspire people to be generous in general, but specifically kind of in the world of hospitality, in the world of owning and operating businesses. And I wonder if you could share kind of some thoughts or learnings that you've had in this journey that you've been on. How would you encourage or inspire people to think about becoming more generous in some of these ways?
Well, I always encourage people, like, being generous actually, like, the blessing is to the giver, not the receiver. Like, people always think, like, oh, I'm going to help these people. Well, if you go serve, People Loving Nashville downtown on a Monday night, I promise you, you would leave there being like, man, I got a lot more from those people I was going to help than they got from me. You know, it's just like, it gives you a lot of perspective on life. And it just is like, you realize they're just all great people that, you know, probably through a sad set of circumstances, you ended up being homeless or in a bad spot. But like, so I just always encourage people, no matter where you are kind of on the faith metric, it's like serving people and giving time, talent, resources will change your life. And you'll start to have so much perspective on your own life and like other people. You have a lot more compassion for people as well. And then I always encourage business leaders and owners, like, I've got friends that are like, man, that's crazy. You give 100% away. I'm like, just start with 1% of your profits and give your team a day every quarter to go serve the community. Like, we give our team like paid days off to go serve whatever they're passionate about. And then we also do like once a quarter, like serve opportunities for our whole team. Hey, invite your family. We're going to go serve downtown, or we're going to go do this. So like, I think like people always hear like generosity and think money. I'm like, time is actually way more valuable. All of us on listening have the same amount of time, and it's precious. And so it's actually harder to give your time than it is to write a check. So, you know, and then I encourage business leaders, like, I had to learn this, and Halftime really helped me with this, but like, there's certain skills. Like, I know you have a marketing background. Your marketing, like, so if you're passionate about entrepreneurs of color, you could like say, hey, I'll help you work on a marketing plan. But I realized like, And I'm good at like finance, like numbers and looking at budgets and thinking about strategic, how you're gonna raise money. So it's like, I used to just go volunteer my time unstrategically. Now I'm like talking to our partners saying, hey, these are kind of the marketplace skills I developed that I've gotten good at over the last 20 something years. Could this be of service to you? You know, and so I'm really trying to give my wisdom and expertise now, and not just my time. And I've realized that that's just like, it's something that comes naturally to me that I enjoy doing anyway, but to the charity, it's like, oh my gosh, we have tons of people to go, you know, hand out the blankets downtown, but we don't have a ton of like people that could like look at our budget and help us think through a fundraising strategy. And I'm like, oh, I love doing that stuff. And so it's a benefit for the charity, and it's fun for me, and it's not, doesn't feel like, oh, like a ton of work, you know?
I love it. It's great advice, Micah. And even us having this conversation today inspired me a lot, inspires, I know, everybody who is listening to this. So thank you for taking time to share your story. And I'll include links in the show notes where people can learn more about what you've built and what you're building. So thanks so much, and wishing you and your team all the best.
Thanks, Josiah. Honored to be on here. Appreciate you doing this.
If you enjoyed today's conversation, I just have one favor to ask, and that is to take out your phone now and text or email this episode to someone you work with or an industry friend and tell them what stood out to you. The reason I produce this show is to help you and your business, and it takes teamwork to do that. So I encourage you to move this beyond just being an idea, something you listen to sharing it with your team so that you can implement it in your hospitality business. And the ideas we heard today drive actual results and improvements for you. I'd also love to hear what you thought about the episode today. You can email me, josiah@hospitalitydaily.com. Hospitality Daily has become the number one podcast in hospitality, thanks to you and the tens of thousands of hospitality providers around the world that join us each day to learn and grow together. So thank you for joining us. And if you have something to teach or share with our community, I'd love to hear from you as well. So please email me or send me a message on LinkedIn and let's talk. A few more things before we go. First, if you haven't done so already, subscribe to this podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or your favorite app to stay inspired each day by actionable insights from the most interesting people in hospitality. If you'd like to listen to more conversations like the one that you just heard, visit this podcast website at podcast.hospitalitydaily.com. I spent a lot of time building out this website because I want to make it really easy for you to listen to the topics and guests that you are interested in, whether that's culture and leadership or operations or technology or something else. You can browse and search the entire library of more than 650 episodes from some of the top leaders and innovators in hospitality at podcast.hospitalitydaily.com and get ideas for delighting the people around you in reaching your business and career goals. And finally, if you prefer to read a recap of these ideas each day, I'd be happy to send you my top takeaways by email. You can subscribe at hospitalitydaily.com. Thanks for listening, and I'll see you here again tomorrow.